Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining with us. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Well, again, welcome, Pat. You had a very interesting article there, and we've heard about this week. It's the auto pen was used to sign a number of...
Right. According to the Heritage Foundation, the only real Joe Biden signature that was not the auto pen was the one he signed in Delaware, where he backed out of the race.
Because he wasn't near the auto pen.
Right, exactly. And the article that I read was analyzing this. Well, is this a big deal? Well, the Constitution says Congress will pass legislation and the president shall sign it. So what does signing mean? It means he's read it, he understands it, he approves it, and he signs it with his name, which gives the authority of the president behind it. Some of those pardons that he gave, he was in St. Croix golfing when the auto pen was used to grant those pardons.
Yes, yeah, so how are you in two places at once?
And, I mean, well... The first time there was a little ruffle about the use of the auto pen was when Obama was in France at a conference, and some piece of legislation needed to be signed by a certain date, or else it's a pocket veto, and he authorized the auto pen, and they signed it, and there was a little grumbling, but you know we got past it.
Well, we also went through them. Just to digress, small rabbit hole. We went through the period where legislators didn't even need to be on site. This was one of the COVID things. Legislators didn't need to be in the House.
Yeah, but they're not required to sign anything.
No, they're not required, but they historically they had been required to be there. Somebody made a...
Right. That was Nancy.
Yeah, that was Nancy. Now, whether that's legal or not, we lived with it for years.
Now, how is this different... Way back when we had the dust-up about whether or not Venezuela was going to take back their illegal immigrants, and Trump was on the golf course, and he made the decision to just do that. I mean, nobody signed anything. He just said, you know, okay, I'm putting a tariff on you, you know, and Venezuela complied.
Well, I think
it's called a threat.
So yeah, he wasn't in the White House anything.
Yeah, that's a little different than a signed presidential proclamation, order, whatever they call them. What really makes this important is we're dealing with a president where most people realize he wasn't able to function. So now the issue comes up, who was handling and who was actually in control of his automatic...
Yeah, who was controlling the auto pen?
Who was actually doing it? Auto pen.
And
see,
what?
It's different if, like in Trump's case, he's on TV and he shows you the order. He's there signing it. Now, if occasionally he used auto stuff for auto sign or for some reason because he was out of the office or something had to be done. But in this case, it goes back to the very heart of the Biden administration being controlled by somebody other than him. I think, to me, that's a key part of this. It should be investigated, and I don't know how the court... I wish I had confidence in the Supreme Court, which I don't, but if I did, I'd be pretty confident that they would come out and say that it's got to be signed by the president, as you said, Pat, the Constitution requires.
Yep.
Not some automated signature.
And this is a big realization of the Nancy Pelosi line that you have to sign it in order to find out what's in it.
Yeah, right.
So the question, I guess, is this auto pen signature, is it what President Biden was told that it was in it, or what did he in fact read it? We don't know the answer to that.
Exactly. And one of the state attorney generals asked Pam Bondi and Cash Patel to investigate it. Now, if they investigate it and tell President Trump they think there's a chance they could prevail, then they could file a lawsuit and get it up to the Supreme Court and have them decide what does "and the president shall sign it" mean.
And there's also the incident of Speaker Johnson talking to the president about the pause on LNG shipments, and the president saying to him, "I didn't pause them." And Johnson said, "Yes, you did." He said, "No, no, I just authorized a study." Well, no, he paused them. Evidently, he did not know that he paused them. And that further calls into question who was doing the signing and who was making the policy.
Well, and the example that I gave, which was he was on the golf course in St. Croix when they were signing those pardons, is that is so different from what Obama did, where there was a deadline and he couldn't get back from France in time to meet the deadline, and it had a legislative purpose.
Mm-hmm.
This is not legislative purposes. There's no deadline. He could have signed those any time. And it seems to me that's a sloppy use of the auto pen. In other words, that they were so used to using it that they just, anytime, you know,
anytime. No real justification for that action.
Some of those pardons are being called into question anyway because of some of the crimes involved.
Right. Well, did you see the pardons attorney got fired?
Yes.
And she says it's because she wouldn't restore Mel Gibson's gun rights.
I don't think that was the reason.
Oh, I think it was. She made it. They gave her a pile of documents. They said, "Go through these and tell us who deserves a pardon." And she went through there, and then they asked her, "Can you add Mel Gibson to this?" And she said, "I don't think so." And they said, "Are you flexible?" "Well, I'll think about it." She went home at night. She came back and she wrote him a letter and said, "No, he had a domestic violence conviction, and I don't think those people should ever, even though it was 10 years ago, I don't think these people should ever get their guns back." And the next day, she was fired.
Interesting.
Well, if you add artificial intelligence, and now you add in this auto pen. Is
that artificial signature, yeah.
Artificial signature. You're not gonna know who's doing what. I mean, it's really scary. It needs, like Pat said, it really needs to be taken to the Supreme Court, and hopefully they'll do the right thing, and they'll come out and say it's got to be a verified actual signature by the person authorized, in this case the president, to sign the document.
We're not
should
allowed,
be witnessed.
We're not allowed to sign something in absentia.
Yeah, you have to go to a notary. I transferred a title for a boat last week, and I had to go in front of the notary to witness my signature.
And you didn't have an artificial, and you didn't have a...
I tried, but it wasn't working that day. It was on the blink.
Well, it would open a can of worms if we had to open up everything that Joe Biden did with a signature. But the question remains, is it important enough for us to get a Supreme Court reading on it? I think it is.
I second that motion.
it is. It's a genuine concern.
Yes.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about what's happening with Doge in the last week or so?
Let's Doge around for a while.
Let's dive into Doge.
One of the things that I think was announced day before yesterday was the lady that President Trump appointed to be the Secretary of the Department of Education. What's her name?
Linda McMahon.
Linda McMahon.
Mayor.
WWE.
Right. Yeah. And, when she took the job, obviously, she got the word from the president that her job was to do away with her job.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great job. Here's your job. Do away with it. And to do whatever necessary to eliminate the Department of Education.
I just want to go back for one second. Ronald Reagan employed Bill Bennett, a Democrat, to do the exact same thing. When Ronald Reagan took, he employed Bill Bennett to get rid of that department.
Department of Education.
And it was unsuccessful then. But now, hopefully, we'll make some better.
Yeah, well, hey, she already made some progress. She announced, I think it was yesterday, like I said, yesterday, the day before, that she was eliminating 50% of the employees in the federal Department of Education, either through layoffs or buyouts, if they're, I guess, close enough to retirement to have a buyout or some system. But that's a, you know, that's a heavy hand, and I'm glad she's doing it. But again, the effort here is paying off. Unfortunately, every one of these things continues to go before a judge somewhere, and that they always find a judge to try to reverse it, to put a hold on it, to do something. This judiciary could totally out of control. Can't do a thing without it going to some judge somewhere.
Well, I believe she also told everyone who works for the Department of Education not to show up for work today.
One of the things that I saw locally was somebody in the county, Craven County. Okay, somebody in the county was really, really upset that Linda McMahon was going to lay off half of that department. Well, the response from an individual was, name one Department of Education employee that ever came to Craven County to help us. None. None that we know of.
They're too busy sitting up in Washington writing rules.
Writing rules, yeah.
That's what
because we know that every time they gave us a grant, more paperwork came with each grant.
Well, there were strings.
They were also sitting up there writing DEI grants.
Yes. And there were there's always strings that come with grants. And they're not just strings. They're strings that would hold up a suspension bridge.
Well, I hope that they start looking at the amount of money that's being given to these highfalutin colleges and universities. And it's amazing when you kind of look at it. And I think it's maybe prompted by the $400 million that Trump just suspended from Barnard College.
Columbia.
I think they're part of the same organization. But anyway, because of their failure to take action to protect the Jewish students. But that's opening up the idea, how much money are we giving these colleges? For example, Harvard got $1 billion worth of federal funds last year. $1 billion.
And they have
Their endowment is $53 billion.
Yeah, they have massive endowments.
And they don't have to pay taxes on any money they make from that endowment. They got $53 billion, and we're giving them $1 billion that we don't have.
And it doesn't make sense.
It does not make sense.
And they don't pay real estate taxes in Cambridge.
In Cambridge, they do not. Any of their facilities don't pay Cambridge tax. It's left up to just the other residents. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for listening.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pond. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We want to just, again, thank you again for listening. Thank you again for participating with CCTA at various times. And we meet at Moore's Barbecue the fourth Thursday of each month. And we're on the radio, and we're also a page in the County Compass. So welcome back. Pat, you wanted to take us into... The legal stuff.
All right. The last time we were here, last Wednesday, we talked about the Supreme Court decision that said that the Trump administration would have to pay the $2 billion that was coming out of USAID. And Amy Coney Barrett signed it along with Roberts, and everybody was horrified and angry. We never should have put her on the bench. She's a traitor to the conservatives. But we didn't have any detail on the actual opinion. And it turns out that the judge, you know, they do judge shopping for these kinds of things. And the judge they picked for this had just taken the bench for the first time on December 2nd.
Oh.
All right. So he didn't know his from a hole in the ground. And since he's a lefty, he was in such a hurry to do whatever the lefties ask him to do that he made a huge mistake. And that the reason the Supreme Court ruled the way they did was on they're very particular about having all the issues that are of extant at the lower level ruled on and finished with before they take up anything. And if you recall, on that Supreme Court decision, there were four dissenting opinions. Now, in order for the Supreme Court to hear a decision, to hear a case, there have to be four that vote in favor. So there were already four in favor of
rehearing,
trouncing this judge and this kind of mess. But the judge wound himself up in the procedure when he did what he did. First of all, the first thing a judge has to do is they have to rule that they have jurisdiction of the matter. All right, for example, in my little county, the state law says that the court in Quay County, which is where I was, has jurisdiction of all criminal matters in Quay County. So when you put somebody on the stand, the first thing you ask them is, do you live in Quay County? Did this happen in Quay County? Yes, it did. Now we've established
jurisdiction. Proceed. Yeah.
On the record, the judge is satisfied, and we can move forward. Well, when they're judge shopping, they... pulled a fast one on the judge, figuring he wouldn't know, because they brought it under, I think, the Administrative Procedures Act, saying that the USAID or Trump didn't give USAID the requisite notice that they should have given before they messed with their money. It turns out that even though in the opinion they were talking about the multitude of contracts and grants for foreign aid, the only court that has jurisdiction over federal contracts is the Court of Federal Claims. So, number one, the judge is down count one, no okay. jurisdiction.
No jurisdiction.
No jurisdiction. And when you go to a judge like this and you ask for a TRO, you'll give him what's called a proposed order, which is what you would like the judge's order to say, granting you all the relief that you've asked for, and it helps the judge because he doesn't have to write his own. So, of course, they had a
some constraints are there, yes.
So they had a proposed order, and he just signed it. You know, he didn't even have a hearing to find out any further information about the number of contracts and grants. And a couple days went by, and there wasn't any money paid. And the parties went back to the judge and asked for contempt. because they weren't paying. Well, the judge made what could be considered a mistake on his side. He says, to the extent defendants have continued the blanket suspension, they are ordered to immediately cease it and take all necessary steps to honor the terms of contracts, grants, cooperative agreements, loans, and other federal foreign assistance awards that were in existence as of January 19th, 2025, including but not limited to disbursing all funds payable under those terms. The original TRO was entered on February 12th, and the order enforcing the TRO was entered on February 25th. So the compliance with the two orders would require payment up through February 25th. Well, there was language in the order that allowed the Trump administration to examine each one that they were to pay through existing other statutes and regulations, which allowed them to continue the suspension. And he had included it in his order, so he couldn't complain about it. This is part of the way he got
gave
trapped.
He gave them the time
right.
to examine.
Right.
And additionally, by the way, folks, a TRO, temporary restraining order. Okay.
Right.
Additionally, there were a number of those payments that were not even within the lawsuit.
Right. That's another thing, newbie judge. He wanted them to pay the whole $2 billion. Well, that included a whole bunch of claimants that were not included in this case. And so the Supreme Court told him, well, number one, they don't know who to pay because you didn't bother to hold a hearing and state which ones were entitled to any kind of payment. Even if the district judge were to impose a preliminary injunction on this far larger class of potential claimants, the Supreme Court told him to take into consideration the feasibility issues with regard to the time for compliance. So he would have to go through each contract and see if it was feasible. Remember, he gave him a deadline, Wednesday at midnight, and all this has to be paid. And the Trump administration came back and said, well, we can't do that because some of them haven't finished the work and they haven't put in a claim. And, you know, the others haven't done the work yet. And all of these contracts were in various stages of completion or beginning. And the judge hadn't made any findings about each one of these. Well, in order for the judge to do that, it's as if he were running the foreign aid.
The executive branch, yeah.
Yes. And he can't do that. And the only, like I said, the only court that has jurisdiction is the Federal Court of Claims. So,
but is this an indication of the lawfare against Trump policies? I mean,
of course we're just
going to see court case every time Trump tries to cut the federal budget, they're going to take him to court.
Yeah, and they've been doing it. And the thing is, it seems to me, and if you look at this, just kind of step back and look at it kind of objectively, here you have the Constitution says you have an executive branch, you have a legislative branch, and you have a judiciary branch. So, okay, the top, the head of the executive branch, the president, signs an order, okay? Now he is overridden by some functionary down at the bottom. You just said this judge just came on
December 2nd.
Very low level in the judiciary system person overrides the head, the highest person in the other branch of government. Now, it seems to me that another way of approaching this would be if it is a definitive presidential decision signed by the president that only the Supreme Court should be able to override that. Not these judges up and down throughout the country where they go judge shopping. And, you know, I don't know whether that's feasible or not, but it just would strike me as a way of properly balancing the fact that you have the head of one of the three branches of government being, and they shouldn't be overridden unless you go to the top of the other branch, not some functionary down on the lower level.
Well, theoretically, the House of Representatives controls the purse strings, but the president has authority of money spent within the executive branch.
True.
Am I correct?
Correct.
Right.
So the court really doesn't have a role in this, or they shouldn't.
I agree.
Well, in this particular case, the Federal Court of Claims has jurisdiction.
If they choose to.
In fact, they beat up the newbie judge so bad, he ended up writing a final order that told him to take it over to the Court of Federal Claims. Because he finally saw the light. But as far as Alan's point about a district judge entering a nationwide injunction, Clarence Thomas has brought that up in opinions previous to this. And in the four that dissented on this particular case, that was brought up again. So the next time one of these injunctions gets in front of the Supreme Court, I suspect that they're going to put the kibosh on a district court. Because normally in a district, in a federal district court, their orders only have binding power within their district. So they're like three states. They can bind three states. And for some reason, they've decided that they can do a national injunction. And Clarence Thomas thinks that that's wrong. And when the case...
It's out of scope, yeah.
Yeah, when it gets up to him, they're going to put a kibosh on that.
Now, how is this different, this area thing, the area of the judge's control? The Missouri Attorney General is the one that brought up the issue of the auto pen.
Mm-hmm.
How does he have the jurisdiction to bring that up?
No, he asked Pam Bondi and Cash Patel to investigate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
he's
that's different.
Referred it properly.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, he asked the feds to look into it.
He didn't rule on it. He referred it.
Yeah. Okay. That explains that. Thank you.
I just wanted to make one comment about something we talked with just a few minutes ago. I'll make this quick. Amy Barrett, right, okay. A lot of people were disappointed with her, thinking she was going to be more conservative than she's proven. And what I read the other day was that after Judge Kavanaugh was threatened by this person who was supposedly mm-hmm. coming to assassinate him, that she was really upset and frightened and scared of what might happen and so on. And some people are speculating that perhaps that may have undermined some of her willingness to support real conservative causes. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But if it is the case, she ought to resign.
Folks, on that, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thanks for listening.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Go to cctaxpayers.com, join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, we wanted to ask you a couple more things. Merrick Garland?
About the protesting in front of the Supreme Court justices' houses. That is not legal.
Whether or not that rattled Amy Coney Barrett.
We don't know if it rattled her or not, but I think we need to mention that it's not legal.
Well, it should have rattled all of them. And they should have all had a burning rage inside that there's a statute that specifically prohibits going to their houses. And Merrick Garland and Joe Biden refused to send federal law enforcement to enforce that statute. And so they were complicit in allowing these protesters mm-hmm. to be out there. So if Amy is shattered, she should be thinking, well, it's those darn Democrats. because I'll tell you what, if this happened under Trump, those people would be in jail.
And where they need to be. And here's the ironic thing about it. There they refused to take legitimate, authorized action to protect the justices, Supreme Court justices. Yet they'll turn around and arrest hundreds, perhaps thousands of these J6s, January 6th demonstrators. Most of those people just happened to be on the site and did not do anything wrong.
Also,
other than the fact that they said, well, you're part of this insurrection.
You're trespassing.
And I'm so glad that Trump had the courage to come in and pardon them.
There's also the matter of the people going to the school board meetings that are being surveilled and harassed and whatever.
What about the Catholics that wanted to go to a Latin mass?
Oh.
They were a domestic terrorist
target of
the FBI.
Now, the other thing you mentioned, too, we're talking about jurisdiction, was the student at Columbia who supports Hamas.
Right. Jurisdiction is defined as the power to hear the matter. And when that guy was arrested in New York, the Trump administration promptly shipped him to Louisiana. And one of the reasons they did that is because the New York judge that put a kibosh on the I'm using kibosh a lot today.
Yes,
extradition.
Very good.
On the extradition, he only has jurisdiction if the guy is in his district. Well, he's not in his district anymore, and I don't think we're going to get the same pushback from Louisiana judges that we're getting from a New York judge. So I suspect this guy's going bye-bye now. And I wanted to, they said one of the reasons the people that are arguing that he should stay here are arguing it because his wife is 8 months pregnant and she's an American citizen. Do you remember the movie they made about the blowing up at the Boston Marathon?
Yeah.
That guy, one of the brothers, was married to an American citizen and she was 8 months pregnant. Hmm. And they sent in the FBI to interrogate her, and she kept sitting there insisting on her rights. And the woman that they sent in to interrogate her, first she started with the good cop routine. And then when the pregnant lady kept resisting her advances, she finally took off her mask and said, "You don't have any rights in here, baby." And, that's the first thing I thought of when I heard about Mahmoud Khalil.
Well, it is illegal to support a terrorist organization.
It is.
And Hamas has been labeled a terrorist organization.
And there's a specific federal statute that sets rules for people that have green cards and visas. And that's what Marco Rubio used to revoke his visa and his green card. And the New York judge is out of line.
So has Ruby already decided that?
Yeah, he'd already decided that.
Okay. That's great.
I wanted to just say that shipping him to Louisiana is called diesel therapy.
I like that.
And
we should use it more often.
We did, because the J6ers that were in jail were constantly being shipped between jails. Like, they would ask to see their lawyer, and they'd be order to pack up, and they'd ship them to a different jail that the lawyer couldn't get to.
So the request time started over again at a minimum, yeah.
Well, they were constantly shipping these people around right up to and including when they got their pardon. And they called it diesel therapy.
So it's not always used wisely
fairly. What this government did to those people that were they rounded up on this January 6th thing is the worst thing I don't think it's ever happened in this country.
Well,
showing the government acting like an autocratic communist regime. This is the same thing they do in Russia.
Yeah.
If they don't like it, they gather you all together and they lock up. We did the same thing under the Biden administration.
The police opened the doors and waved them in, and then they were charged with trespassing. That's insane.
Do we actually think we can ever find the person responsible for the bureaucracy decision? I'm not talking the political, you know, we have elected people that are responsible to us, but there's a bureaucracy in there that's also making the decisions. Going back to the auto pen, we don't believe, at least from our perspective, we don't believe that President Biden actually knew what he was signing with the auto pen because he didn't sign it. But some bureaucrat actually did the decision, this will be signed. Will we ever find those people?
Well, I mean, if you look, you may be able to, but the point is, there's evidence, too, that the FBI had these, quote, informers, unquote, that were in the crowds encouraging this.
26 of them.
Yes. That's been demonstrated.
Can we get back to Doge? I want to go back to the Small Business Administration and the loans that were made as a result of the COVID epidemic, because it has come out now that 3,095 loans for a total of $333 million were given to borrowers whose age was more than 115 years old.
Yeah, but this was balanced off by another.
Well, yeah, there was another one. There was a bunch of loans given to people who were 11 years old.
So on the average, you're 70 years old.
And I want to point out that the article says that the loans were approved even though the Social Security number did not match the person that the loan was granted to.
Which is insane.
It's crooked. It's corrupt. And the thing about it is that there's so much of this they're uncovering. This is just, you know, just the surface, in my opinion, because they've only been at this for, 50 days, 51 days, whatever it is. But these are the things that shows that the government has no inherent system of checks and balances, that this can go on like this in all these areas, and nobody stops it. There's no accountability. And this should be done periodically. You're going to have to bring outside people in, like Trump's had the courage to do. But, Republicans didn't want to do it. The Democrats obviously wouldn't do it. But this needs to be done periodically.
Well, each department had an IG. They were supposed to be doing it. Yeah. And when he went in and fired the IGs immediately, everybody raised holy heck. Now there'll be nobody watching what goes on.
like they were ever watching.
Well, yeah. I loved
the
Bill Maher comment. He said, at first I was upset because they fired the AGs. Then I looked at the amount of fraud they were finding. And then I thought, well, maybe they weren't doing their job.
Maybe.
But, you know the other interesting thing, and again, it was clarified this week. I think it was clarified a little bit, that as President has brought in Musk and his minions, okay, the 20-year-olds, the 19-year-olds, right, the folks that can't buy their own cigarettes,
right,
okay? he brought those in, but they are advisors to the various departments and the various directors. They cannot make the decision to cut off any funding. They can advise, but they don't have the ability. People are going crazy because they think that Musk is coming in there and stealing money and doing whatever else. No, he's advising, he's finding things. He's about the most curious person that you could ever meet. And because he wants to understand how everything works, and he's understanding how finance doesn't work.
I know the Congress during the joint Joint Statement of Congress speech, we're holding up those little signs that says Musk steals. I hope they're covered by the speech and debate clause, because otherwise, if I were him, I would sue them blind.
And win.
And how stupid can you get? You're going to say that the richest man in the world, or one of the richest men in the world, is doing this because he can profit and he can steal from it. He's probably losing more money being involved with this than he is.
A lot of his wealth is based on stock price for Tesla, and Tesla's stock has tanked. Yeah.
And it's starting to go back up.
And there's a boycott on the left that will not buy Teslas, though they're the ones that like the electric vehicles.
Did you see this thing about the two people that have been stranded in space? Since September? Mm-hmm. They were supposed to go up for 9 days. They've been up there for 9 months. But what has been revealed was, after it was found out that they couldn't return because of some problems, Musk offered to use SpaceX, his own space program, to go up and rescue these people. But Biden
turned them down.
Biden, or his minions, it might have been one of those automatic signatures again, they turned him down. So they left these people off for 9 months just because they didn't like the fact that Musk was making a transition over to support Trump. It shows you how
petty.
Petty and how inhumane they are. People talk about Trump. One of the things, if you hear almost everybody who gets to know Trump, they're impressed with his humanity, his caring for people, his concern about other people. Biden's the opposite, or was the opposite.
It's interesting to me, the Michigan senator who gave the rebuttal to Trump's speech the other night.
Alyssa Slotkin.
Yes. She has explained that Americans only voted for Trump because the U.S. is going through its angry teenage years, and their brains haven't been fully formed enough to vote for Kamala Harris. Now, she made this statement on The View, which is totally appropriate for The View, because it's a totally stupid statement.
And is a totally stupid show.
I think that works very well.
She fit right in there.
Greg Gutfeld has a specific feature on his show, Our View of The View.
Oh.
And he showed that clip of her explaining that we're all angry teenagers and our brains aren't fully formed, and that's why we don't vote for Democrats.
So she just insulted more than half the voters in America when she said that.
Well, Jasmine Crockett made the same remark. She said we're too stupid and we need to work more on education. And then Ilhan Omar called us just idiots.
Well, the saving grace is that she made the statement on The View, so no one will see it.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Thank you for listening.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Alan, you wanted to take us in a different direction.
Yeah, I want to bring the discussion to something going on in North Carolina, specifically with the General Assembly. And I heard the other day that there was a bill introduced to raise the pay for teachers. Now, I'm all in favor of people getting a fair wage, but I'm concerned about how this is going to be done. And I just want to go back a second, where I remember when I first started working for the Department of Correction, we had a merit-based system to the extent that you as a supervisor, you were given sufficient authorization to grant a promotion, a salary increase, say a salary increase, not a promotion, a salary increase to 60% of your staff. You could not exceed that. So what you had to do is you had to sort out and justify the best performing people on your staff. Now, take that example. Now, that was during a Republican governorship. Then when Democratic Governor Hunt came in, he eliminated that. There was no role that the supervisor played in evaluating their employees for raises. Okay. So why do I say that? I want to bring that back as an example with the teacher pay. Now, I think if you, let's say, for example, if you're running a business and you have 10 employees and you're going to give a salary increase, I would assume that you would evaluate those 10 employees on their effectiveness, on their output. If they're salesmen, what's their sales, what is their sales amount or whatever? How effective are they at doing the job? There's nothing in this bill. There's never been any. It's just going to be some sort of an across-the-board salary increase.
So based on longevity and
whatever they decide, but yeah. I'll bet it has nothing to do with the role of a teacher. What is the role of a teacher? The role of a teacher is to educate the students in their class. That's what they should be evaluated on, and that's what they should be paid on. I saw the other day that these are national figures, but they're probably true for North Carolina, too. Only 30% of fourth graders are reading at their expected proficiency, 30%. Eighth graders, 32%. 12th graders, 37%. They're not even 50% of the students are achieving a reasonable level of reading proficiency. I think they ought to, if they're going to provide more money for the teachers, it should be based on some system by which they evaluate the extent to which that teacher has increased the reading, math, spelling, whatever academic skill that class has achieved at the end of the period of time, let's say at the end of the year. You know, they have end of grade tests, they know where the kids are starting, and they know where they end up. And the teachers should get paid based on their ability and their actually increasing the proficiency of their students, because that's what they are, they're teachers. Teachers are supposed to teach. then you would have a system where there would be an incentive for the teachers to come up with perhaps new ways of teaching, focusing more on basics or whatever, in order to get this achievement up. But just to grant the salary money to people based, like you said, Bob, on longevity or whatever, that does not motivate the teachers to teach better. We need a system where we pay people for what they achieve. The teachers should be evaluated, and that's the ones that should get the bonuses or however you want to call it, because that's how private industry works, does it not?
And the achievement is not what I achieved as getting advanced degrees, but the achievement is what did I pass on to the students.
That's right. That's their job. Their job is to teach academic skills, and that's what they should be evaluated on. And I don't see that in the bill. Maybe it'll put something in like that, but I've never seen it.
No. And you look at that. Right now, they're just teaching to the test. There's some kind of test, a grade test that they give out, and there's strictly teaching to the test. They're not.
Well, you know, and I'm not totally against the idea that a test would be used to determine whether the person's increased their ability. I mean, I agree with you. It shouldn't be exclusively to test items where you try to find out what the test questions are, and then you hammer them with it over and over. But if the test is a valid test, it should be differentiating between a good reader and a poor reader, or a good math student and a one who doesn't have those math skills. And that's what the teacher should be evaluated on. And, because, you know, right now, I mean, if you compare the education system in the United States, it's failing.
Yes.
The public education system is failing.
If you can't read, I would say very avid reader when I was growing up. And I read far many years above my age. It's my understanding, my opinion, that if you can read, you can teach yourself anything you need to.
Yes.
You know, as a lawyer, I often found that out because you're expected to be an expert on whatever topic of the case that you're taken with. And I remember as a brand new attorney, one of the cases that I got involved accident reconstruction. So all of a sudden I had to learn how long it takes for a semi-truck to brake when it's going a certain miles per hour and things like that. But if you have a good library and you can read, you can teach yourself anything you need. But if you can't read, the world is closed to you.
Well, you know. Now, Mary, the school you grew up in and the school that our kids grew up in, you know, you have some, within the grade level, you have some set of teachers that are teaching remedial for that grade, but you expect, you're hoping that when they're teaching the remedial thing, they not only teach the grade work, but they also bring that student further up to grade level.
And another bill, I understand that they're considering and possibly have just passed, is excluding cell phones from the classroom of public schools. Now, I don't understand how any teacher who is effective and wants to be a good teacher and teach their students would allow students in their class to have a cell phone. Why does it have to be the General Assembly? Why can't the teacher go to the students and say, you have a cell phone? You put your cell phone up on this desk until class is over. How can you teach when the kids are distracted with cell phones?
I agree with that to a point. But I also want to say that for these kids, some of their cell phones replace the card catalog that you have in the library. They can use their cell phones to look things up, to look up topics. Now, that has to be supervised. They shouldn't have the cell phone in their classroom the whole time. But let's say that they have a history assignment and they have a cell phone. They may be able to go to whatever the search engine is, or Grok, the AI thing now, which doesn't always give you accurate information, and put in the topic and begin to learn about it. So the cell phone has a use other than social media.
I'm going to go the opposite direction. I think if a teacher, an individual teacher, prohibited the use of cell phones in a classroom, all of a sudden the parents would come in and go after the teacher, and I can guarantee the administration is not standing behind that teacher. And
the principal wouldn't back them.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. Maybe in this day and age, you do have to go to a General Assembly. I remember when I was a kid and a student, if the teacher said, you don't do this, you don't...
That's
the teacher
gospel.
Was the authority in that classroom.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, they have to take them down to the principal, or they have to do these other things. And there's just one other thing I just want to mention about the education is this whole business about this opportunity scholarship program. Rob, you know what that is, right?
Yes.
It's money that you can apply for. You don't always get it. There's like a lottery system, and they don't necessarily have enough money to fund all of it. But they continue to exclude homeschoolers. Homeschoolers are the largest group of non-public students in North Carolina. It's 169,000 homeschoolers. The next biggest group is private schools, which is like 56,000. It's tremendously larger. But the homeschooling parents get zero, zip. So the idea that there is school choice in North Carolina is not true. It's all bogus. If there was true school choice, every parent of a child would get X amount of dollars, the same amount, based on whether they sent their kid to public school, private school, charter school, or homeschool. And that amount should be follow the student. That would be school choice. Not, well, you have to apply for it. You don't know whether there's going to be enough money. If your income goes up, then they reduce the amount of money you get. All these socialist ideas, that needs to be eliminated. They need school choice. And if a student leaves the public school to go to a private school, a charter school, or homeschool, that money should be extracted from the public school system, which it's not now. They lose students, but they don't lose the money.
They don't lose the money, no. I equate it with going to a various car dealership or car repair places. If I'm dissatisfied with the work that one of my car dealership or car repairman does, I'm going to a different one. I am taking my money to a different location.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, and like you said, that's the freedom of choice that this country was built on. But we even have Republicans who form these bills that don't seem to get that message.
Randy Weingarten the other day told us why she opposes doing away with the Department of Education, because it will lead to more school choice. And she's afraid that they'll choose not to go to public schools.
Which is a reason to get rid of the Department of Public Education.
Yes.
Before we leave, I just want to mention there is a genocide going on in Syria that the media has not done a really good job of reporting. We need to be aware of it. The person who is now the head of Syria is former Al-Qaeda. He was under I want to pronounce the guy's name right. Oh, al-Zarqawi. He claimed to have changed his spots, but he hasn't. He's gone after the Alawites, he's gone after the Christians, and I'm sure he's gone after the Jews. And the only bright spot in this, which is very ironic, is many of the targets of his genocide have found refuge in one of the Russian bases in Syria, and the Russians are protecting the people that are going to be killed. But this needs your prayers, because it's awful.
Because it's over, what I heard is over 1,000 men, women, children that have been just slaughtered and massacred by these Muslims.
That was the first day. Today,
the first day.
Yeah. Today, worse. There's even a bigger number.
Yeah, it's
and
it's,
the picture showed them just laying in rows, and it showed one of those front loaders, and the bucket was full of bodies.
Yeah.
If anybody believes that, and I'm not saying all Muslims are like this, because they're not. But if anybody believes that the Muslim religion is a religion of peace, they got to go read the Quran,
yes,
where it authorizes Muslims to kill other people who are non-believers, infidels.
Yes. Children of the book, Jews and Christians.
Yes. Folks, we got to end the show on that. Thank you for listening to CCTA Wake Up Call.